nightmares are being caused by Cetricus Ra. I find it extremely troubling that he's able to transmit them somehow, presumably through some form of Mogadorian telepathy, without knowing our exact location. In fact, you said you saw Chicago burning, correct?
Ella nods, not looking eager to revisit her latest nightmare. Bernie Kosar, curled up at her feet, nuzzles against her.
It was Chicago after a major battle, Marina clarifies.
Is he taunting us? Six asks. Or is it like some kind of prophecy?
I thought we were done with prophecies, Eight says, rolling his eyes.
Sometimes there's a little bit of truth in the nightmares, I say.
Like when we had that vision about New Mexico,
Nine chimes in.
Yeah, but other times it's like he's just trying to screw with us.
The content doesn't worry me so much as the fact that Cetricus Ra is able to transmit them at all, says Malcolm, deep lines forming in his face as he thinks this through.
Do you think it's possible he's tracking us through the dreams?
If he could do that, wouldn't we already be fighting off Moogs? Eight replies. Why even bother drawing John and Nine off to New Mexico?
I nod in agreement, thinking back to the visions Nine and I shared. Even though the nightmares can be creepily specific, I don't think he knows where we are. It's more like he's trying to make us slip up.
The question, then, is how do we stop the nightmares?
Malcolm asks.
I've got a solution, Six says, and everyone looks in her direction.
She takes a considering sip from a mug of coffee.
Let's go kill Cetricus Ra.
Nine claps his hands and points at Six.
I like the way this chick thinks.
Oh, is it that easy?
Five asks, speaking up for the first time.
You make it sound like taking out the trash.
I wish it were so simple, I say. But we don't know where he is, and even if we could find him, that's not going to be an easy fight. The last time we went up against him almost killed us.
We could get him to come to us,
Nine suggests, glancing over at Five.
Maybe fire up some more crop circles.
You can't be serious, Sam says.
I noticed him shifting in his seat at the mention of Cetricus Ra.
He's not serious,
Five says, glaring in Nine's direction.
He's mocking me.
Nine shrugs and feigns a yawn.
Whatever. I really do think we should go fight something.
That's all you ever want to do, Eight cuts in.
Yeah, it's my thing.
For the first time ever, we're together, I say, keeping my voice measured. We have the element of surprise on our side. We've got an opportunity to prepare and pick our next battle. Let's not rush into anything.
John's right, Marina says. There's still so much we don't know about ourselves, our powers, our chests.
It'd be good to know exactly what we're working with, Eight says. We did some training with Nine in the lecture hall the other day. It was helpful. Surprisingly so.
Nine grins.
Compliment taken, insult ignored.
Yeah. Sarah chimes in. I think I speak for all of us humans when I say a little more combat training wouldn't hurt.
Learning what our chests contain would help, too, I offer. Maybe we could figure out which items are those Phoenix stones that Malcolm was talking about.
An inventory seems to be in order,
Malcolm says. Which means we need to make finding your chest a top priority, I say, looking over at Five.
Absolutely,
Five replies, seeming about as certain as I've ever seen him.
I know exactly where to go. We can do that whenever you want.
That might make a good first mission, Eight says, especially if we could get it done under the Moog radar.
I still think we should just blow up their freaking radar,
Nine grumbles.
Soon, buddy,
I reply. For now,
We need to play it safe. Gather our strength. Malcolm, what about the Mogadorian guy? Adam.
Malcolm shakes his head, his features sagging. I've hooked up a tracker so we'll be alerted if his cell phone turns on. But nothing yet. I fear the worst.
Maybe he just ditched his phone, suggests Sam, trying to cheer up his forlorn-looking dad. We got a bit off topic here, didn't we? Six puts in. What about Ella's nightmares?
It's Ella, who has been listening quietly, that responds.
I'll tough them out. The next time that big freak gets into my head, I'm going to punch him in the balls.
Whoa!
All right, I say, grinning. Meeting adjourned.
Chapter 21. Later, the four of us that still have our chests gather in the workshop with Malcolm. I'm happy to help out. I'm just not sure how much use I'll be. Adelina wasn't around enough to explain what any of the stuff in my chest does. From the lecture hall comes the muffled sound of Six training marksmanship with Sam, Sarah, and Ella. I think Five is in there too, although he didn't look too thrilled about the prospect of learning to shoot. Nine stares longingly at the door to the lecture hall. Sighing dramatically, he starts rummaging through his chest.
Check this out, Nine says.
He holds up a small purple stone and then places it on the back of his hand. The stone slides into his hand. Through it. Nine turns his hand over just as the stone pops out in his palm.
Pretty cool, right? He asks me, waggling his eyebrows. But what is it supposed to do? Eight asks, looking up from his own chest. I don't know. Impress girls? Nine looks over at me. Did it work? I hesitate, trying not to roll my eyes too hard. Not really, but I've seen guys teleport, so I'm kind of hard to impress.
Tough crowd.
What does it feel like when it passes through your hand? Malcolm asks. He holds a pen poised over a clipboard.
Kind of weird, I guess. My hand goes numb until the stone passes through.
Nine shrugs, glancing around.
You guys want to try?
Yes, actually, Malcolm says.
When he puts the stone on his hand, nothing happens.
I guess it's Lorik only.
Malcolm hands a stone back to Nine. Instead of putting it back into his chest, Nine shoves the purple stone into his pocket.
Maybe he's going to go out and try to impress some ladies later.
John holds up a collection of brittle-looking leaves, the bundle held together by some yellow twine. He cradles them gently in his hands, unsure what to make of them.
This has to be something to do with Lorien, right?
Maybe it's a reminder from Henri that you're supposed to rake the lawn, Nine says, digging through his own chest again. I don't have any dumb leaves in here.
Malcolm peers at the bundle in John's hands. Gently, he runs his index finger along the edge of a leaf. I almost expect the delicate little thing to crumble. Suddenly, the sound of a gentle breeze fills the room. It stops as soon as Malcolm puts back his finger.
You all heard that? He asks.
Sounded like someone left a window open, Eight says, looking around at the four walls cluttered with equipment. Not a shred of daylight comes through anywhere.
It was a sound of wind on Lorien, John says, his eyes getting distant.
Somehow, I know that's what it was.
Do it again, Nine says, and I'm a little surprised by the sincerity in his voice. But then, I really want to hear the wind again, too.
There was something comforting about it. John brushes his hands through the leaves, and this time, the sound is fuller. My skin prickles. It's almost as if I can feel the fresh Lorik air on my skin. It's beautiful.
Amazing, 8 says.
But what is it for? 9 asks, returning to his usual bluntness.
It's a reminder, John replies, his voice low like he's a little choked up and trying to hide it.
A reminder of what we've left behind, what we're fighting for.
Interesting, Malcolm makes a note on his clipboard.
Further study will be required. One by one, Malcolm stands over our shoulders as we empty out our chests.
He writes down everything, making notes for the objects we know how to work and underlining the ones that we don't.
From the dark gloves that shimmer when I touch them to the circular device that looks sort of like a compass, pretty much every item in my inheritance gets underlined.
What do you think this does?
8 asks, holding up a curved antler that looks like it was snapped off the head of a small deer.
It's the only thing in here I don't know how to work.
5 seconds after 8 held up the antler, Bernie Kosar bolts through the workshop door with his snout in the air. He looks thrilled, his tail wagging. He jumps right on 8, pawing at him.
He wants the antler, says John, in case you couldn't tell.
Shrugging, 8 lowers the antler and BK takes it in his jaws. He flops over onto his back and begins to roll back and forth. He emits a happy purring sound that definitely doesn't go with his dog form. In fact, his form begins to flicker in and out, almost as if he's having trouble controlling himself.
He's so weird.
9 is laughing hysterically.
If we weren't on the run, I would totally put this on the internet.
Whoa, whoa, John says, rubbing his temples. Calm down, BK. Malcolm looks from BK to John.
You can communicate with him?
Yeah, John answers, telepathically. So can 9. He's pretty wound up. He says the antler is, I don't know how to put it. It's coming through in a weird language, like a totem or something.
For Chimera.
Well,
he's our only Chimera, so he can keep it, says 8,
grinning as he crouches down to rub BK's belly.
Ella came in here on a ship filled with Chimera, I say.
Do you think we could use that to attract them? Maybe they're lost and need to know where to find us.
Malcolm immediately starts writing on his clipboard.
Very good thought, Marina. I smile, feeling a little swell of pride. Now if I could only figure out what the stuff in my chest does.
If you're looking for boring nature-themed crap, I've got this,
9 says, holding up a small leather pouch. He passes it around, and we each look inside. It's filled with rich chocolate brown soil.
When Sander was explaining my inheritance, he told me it was meant for growing things, but that we wouldn't need it for a long while.
9 reties the leather strings to the top of the pouch and dismissively tosses it back in his chest. I guess he's not all that interested in things that can't kill Mogadorians. I look through my chest, brushing aside the assortment of gems that could have funded my Spanish version of 9's penthouse if Adelina had cared, looking for anything that might have to do with restarting Lorien.
What about this?
I ask, holding up a slim vial of crystal clear water. The glass is cool to the touch beneath my fingers.
Drink it, suggests 9.
Malcolm shakes his head.
I'd advise against ingesting any of the items in your chests until we know what they do.
You listening?
8 elbows 9.
Don't eat any of the rocks.
I uncork the vial. As soon as the air touches it, the liquid transforms to a shade of blue, exactly the same as the Lorelite stones. It's only a brief reaction, though, the blue quickly fading back to the clear water. I drag my finger down the side of the vial
and a trail of bright blue appears in the liquid, then fades as I lift my finger away. I notice little tendrils of blue swirling about beneath the tips of my fingers where I'm holding the vial. "Did you see that?" I exclaim. "It's like the liquid can feel your touch through the glass," says John. "May I?" asks Malcolm. I hand it over to Malcolm. When he holds the vial, the color of the liquid doesn't change. "Hmm," he says, and holds the vial out to John. "You try." As soon as John takes the vial from Malcolm, the liquid again flashes the brilliant cobalt shade of Lorelite. We all watch as it slowly fades away, except where John is touching it. The way the liquid pulses, it's like it wants out of the vial, like it's eager to be in contact with us. "So it detects Lorik," 8 says. "But what good is that if we're the only ones left?" "I'm going to try something," I say, taking the vial back from John. Carefully, I tip the vial so that just a single drop spills into the palm of my hand. The liquid turns blue, and a tickling sensation spreads across my palm. Then, the single droplet quivers and expands, gaining mass and density, until I'm holding in my hand a smooth nugget of Lorelite. "Whoa!" 8 says, taking the stone out of my hand and turning it over, examining it. "Whoa, indeed!" Malcolm bends down, gazing in amazement at the stone. "Whatever that material is, it defies the laws of physics." "So we can create Lorelite with that," John muses. 9 and I both have something that looks like it could be used for farming or planting, and 8 has an object that can summon Chimera. Doesn't it seem like that's the stuff that can help us jumpstart Lorien?" "It does indeed," says Malcolm. I put the stopper back into the vial, not wanting to waste any more of our precious liquid Lorelite. The inventorying goes on for a little while longer with Malcolm taking really meticulous notes. We're all eager to learn as much as we can about our inheritances. Well, except for 9. He keeps gazing towards the door of the lecture hall. He makes us promise to train with him after we're done with all the brainy stuff. In truth, I'm looking forward to another session in there myself. I feel like I've got a lot of catching up to do before I'm at the same level of combat readiness as the others. When the others leave, 8 and I linger, putting the last few items back into our chests. I put the Lorelite stone that I created in there as well, but 8 plucks it out. He squeezes it tightly in his fist and concentrates. "What are you doing?" He opens his eyes and sighs. "I wanted to see if I could use this to teleport to one of the other Lorelite stones. I've tried using my pendant before and that didn't work either. They must not be big enough chunks." "What? You wanted to take a quick jaunt to Stonehenge? Maybe Somalia?" I take back the stone and put it in my chest, locking it up.
"Things are going to be moving fast now, that's all.
I just wish we had more time to do some of that exploring." "We?" I reply, feeling a sudden heat rising in my face. "You are going to teleport me away with you?" 8 flashes me that disarming smile. "Just for a quick breather. You telling me you couldn't use one?" 8's right, obviously. After getting woken up before dawn by Ella's screaming and witnessing that horrific vision of Chicago, I could definitely use a timeout from Lorik business. But there's no time for that now. I touch 8 on the arm. "Sorry," I tell him. "We've got to be serious. Like 9 said, no time for gallivanting off to foreign lands or even the waterfront." 8 sighs, with good-natured disappointment. "Ah, well," he says, "we'll always have pizza." He pauses for a moment, looking like he wants to say something more. But then Nine bursts in the room. He's already changed into workout clothes. You suckers ready to work? Chapter 22. Let's grab 5, Nine says gruffly, after 8 and I had gotten changed. That dude could use a workout. We find 5 stretched out on one of the couches in Nine's living room. He's fired up some video game from Nine's collection on the big screen television. I don't have any experience with the things, and watching 5 play makes me sort of dizzy. The game is in first-person perspective. 5's character running around a battlefield with a machine gun, mowing down soldiers. 5 doesn't even acknowledge us entering the room until 8 loudly clears his throat. Oh, hey, you guys, 5 says, not bothering to pause the game. This thing is freaking amazing. We never had anything like this on the islands. Watch this. On the screen, 5's character launches a grenade. A group of enemy soldiers hiding behind a pile of sandbags explodes in a shower of dismembered limbs. I look away. After seeing into Ella's dream this morning, the video game just seems a little too realistic. Cool, 8 says politely. 9 yawns. He stands right in front of the television so that 5 is finally forced to pause the game. I used to be really into these when I was a kid, 9 says. Now I'm more into the real thing. You want to join us? 5 raises an eyebrow. The real thing? We're going to go kill some soldiers in, he squints at the open case for the video game. World War II? I guess my Earth history must be spotty because I thought that was all over. We're going to train, replies 9, unamused. From what I heard about Arkansas, it sounds like your game could use some work. I notice a flash of anger in 5's eyes, and for a moment, I think he might leap off the couch. But then he settles back, crossing his arms and making a concerted effort to keep his features neutral. I'm not really feeling it right now, 5 says. He makes a show of stretching out further on the couch. Anyway, this game is good for my hand-eye coordination. Probably the best training I'll get around here. I'm realizing now that this might have been a bad idea. 9's about the least diplomatic person I've ever met. After spending some time around him, I've learned not to take him too seriously. I can tell 5 hasn't quite worked up the same tolerance yet. It's really surprisingly fun, I say, trying to smooth things over. If 5 doesn't feel like we're pushing him, maybe he'd be more likely to train with us. It gives us a chance to work together as a team. Also, we'd really like the chance to get to know you better. For a moment, 5's look softens. It's like I figured, if you're nice to him, he lets his guard down. Nobody likes to be told what to do, especially when they've been alone for as long as 5 has. I can tell he's going to cave in and come and train with us. Unfortunately, 9's not so good at picking up signals, or maybe he's just impatient. He casually walks behind 5's couch and, with one hand, flips it over. 5 is unceremoniously dumped onto the floor. 8 shakes his head, although there's a small smile playing at the corner of his lips. I know 5 didn't make the best first impression on him, dredging up all those memories of what 8 did in India. Still, this is no way to treat our newest guard. Come on, 9, I say, using that disappointed but not angry tone I used to get from the nuns. You're being a bully. 9 ignores me. 5 has already jumped back to his feet, glaring at 9. What'd you do that for? My couch, says 9. I can do whatever I want with it. 5 makes a disgusted snort,
That is so childish. You're ridiculous. Maybe, Nine replies, shrugging blithely. You can show me how ridiculous I am in training. So this is all one of Nine's little motivational tools, trying to get Five mad at him so that he'll come and fight in the lecture hall. Such a boy's plan. We could have just asked Five nicely. Five keeps right on staring at Nine, sizing him up. He smirks, a glint of something mischievous in his eyes, and I get the impression that Five has seen right through Nine's ploy. Tell you what, says Five, I'll give you a free shot right here. If you can hurt me, I'll come train with you. If you can't hurt me, you take the overcompensating macho stuff out of my face for the rest of the day. Nine's face lights up in a wolfish grin. You want me to hit you, little guy? Sure, Five replies, his hands in his pocket, chin jutting out. Give it a shot. This is dumb, you guys, I say, trying to defuse what has suddenly become a really absurd situation. Both Five and Nine are so involved in this pissing contest when we should be learning to work together. I glance over at Eight for some support. A small smile tugs at the corners of his lips, almost like he's amused by this whole thing. When he catches my look of disapproval, Eight's smile turns sheepish, and he places a hand on Nine's shoulder. Let's just go train, Eight says, keeping his voice light. Five can come by when he's ready. Nine shrugs off Eight's hand and cocks his fist back. He raises his eyebrow at Five. You sure you want to test me, Frodo? I hope your punches are better than your insults, Five snaps back. I have to admit, I sort of admire his spirit. Of course, this all could have been avoided if he'd just swallowed his pride to begin with. The way both Five and Nine are acting is pathetic. Two of the last remaining Lorik in the universe need to be given a time out. Like me, Eight has resigned himself to letting this play out. We both take a step back. Nine really takes his time drawing it out. He cracks his knuckles, rolls his neck, makes sure his shoulders are square. I think I'm more nervous than Five is. He just stands there passively, waiting for Nine to throw his punch. Finally, Nine takes a swing. It's a big overhand blow, and even though it's definitely enough to knock someone out, I think I've seen Nine throw punches harder and faster. I guess he took a little off the punch, not wanting to hurt Five that bad. In mid-swing, Five's skin transforms into glistening steel. Nine's fist crunches against Five's metallic jaw, and he cries out immediately. It's like hitting a metal girder. I put a hand over my mouth to stifle a cry of surprise. Next to me, Eight has to cut off a surprised laugh when he realizes that Nine's hand is definitely broken. He spins away from Five, clutching his hand against his chest. Five's skin returns to normal. Is that it? Nine growls in a series of curses. I rush over to take a look at his hand, but he pushes me away and stalks out of the room, heading towards the lecture hall. I'm sure he'll want me to heal that hand as soon as he cools down. Anyway, after acting like a jerk, he deserves a little pain. If he really listened to Four talking about our battle in Arkansas, he would have seen that coming, Five says as he watches Nine storm off. His voice wooden, almost bored. He's not exactly the master technician, Eight replies coolly. Well, welcome to the team. Enjoy your video games, I guess. Eight follows Nine out of the room. Five watches him go, looking a little baffled that Eight would just brush him off. I help him return the couch that 9 flipped over to its normal position. I'm not sure what I did wrong here, 5 says quietly.
How am I the bad guy?
You're not, I reply. Things just got out of hand.
You were both being pretty stupid.
He's been picking on me since I walked in the door, 5 continues. I figured if I didn't stand up to him, it would just keep happening. I sit on the couch next to 5. I understand, I tell him. 9 has a way of getting under people's skin.
John told me a story about how him and 9 almost tore each other apart once.
You'll get used to it. That's the thing. I don't want to get used to it.
5 picks up the video game controller,
but he doesn't start playing again. He clicks a few buttons, and the screen goes dark.
And the thing is, I wanted to train with you guys. I don't want to be left out. I want to see what you guys can do and learn to work together. It was just the way he asked. I couldn't stop myself from reacting.
I pat 5 gently on the shoulder. You know, you and 9 aren't all that different. He seems to consider this, gazing down at the carpet. No, I guess we aren't. Should I apologize for hurting his hand? I shake my head, chuckling a little.
It's probably his pride that's hurting more. But you shouldn't apologize for that either.
I stand up and grab 5's arm, tugging him to his feet. Come on, let's get to training. 5 hesitates. After that, you really think I'd be welcome?
You're one of us, aren't you?
I say decisively. What better time to learn teamwork than after punching a teammate in the face? 5 almost allows himself a laugh. He nods, and we walk towards the lecture hall together. Thanks, Marina, he says.
You know, you're the first person to really make me feel welcome here.
Well, at least there's that. I might not be able to help Ella in her dreams, or identify half the objects in my inheritance, or fight as well as the others. But at least I'm good at coaxing jerks into being more personable. I wonder if that's a legacy.
Chapter 23. John holds the Illinois ID card up to the light. He bends it between his fingers and picks at the picture with his thumbnail. Then he turns to me, smiling wide. This is great work, Sam. As good as the ones Henri used to make. Finally, I sighed, relieved. A dozen similar ID cards, all with some minor defects, sit in a pile next to Sanders' main computer. All of them have John's face, along with the name John Kent. You should make one for yourself, John says. Maybe your alias could be Sam Wayne. Sam Wayne? Yeah, like Bruce Wayne. Superman's buddy, without any powers? That's why you chose Kent for my last name, right? It's a Superman reference. I didn't think you'd catch that, I reply. Never knew you were into comics. I'm not, but we aliens like to keep tabs on each other. John comes around to the other side of the desk, skirting one of the workshop's many junk piles, to look at the screen over my shoulder. All this was already on Sanders' computer? Yep, I reply, guiding the cursor across the various forgery programs and government database hacks installed on Sanders' machine. It was just a matter of accessing them, and, figuring out how to use them right. I point to the pile of screwed-up IDs. Awesome, John says. Let's get new identities ready for everyone. It'll make traveling to pick up 5's chest easier. Can't 8 just teleport you down there? John shakes his head. He can only do long ranges between those massive laurelite stones he mentioned last night. And with short range, there's too much risk of being spotted appearing from thin air. Or of him teleporting us into a wall. Yeah, that would hurt. I adjust the webcam that's hooked onto the monitor so that it's pointing at me. When my image appears on the screen, I take a second to fix my hair and then flash my corniest smile. Nice, John says, still watching. What can I say? I'm photogenic. I always wondered why Picture Day at Paradise High was called Sam Good Appreciation Day. And now you know. I drag and drop the picture into one of the programs Sander installed, and it immediately gets to work, resizing my pic for a new driver's license. So, I begin, lamely, not having a better segue prepared. There's something I've wanted to ask you. Yeah? What's going on with you and Six, now that Sarah's, not a traitor? John laughs. We actually talked about it on the way to Arkansas. I think we're cool now. It was kind of awkward for a while. I'm with Sarah, though, 100%. Okay, cool, I reply, keeping things nonchalant. Although that doesn't stop John from elbowing me. She's all yours, he says. And my face gets hot right away. That's not why I was asking. Uh-huh, sure, John says, picking up a loose bolt from the desk and tossing it at me. You're gonna act like you forgot about what happened before she went to Spain? Her saying she likes you? Her kissing you? I shrug, flicking the bolt back in John's direction. That sounds familiar, but it wasn't on my mind at all. Even as I say this, I think back to that hug Six gave me when we were reunited in Arkansas. My face gets even hotter. Luckily, before John can mess with me further, my dad enters. He smiles at us as he wipes his greasy hands off on an old rag. He looks worn down from working on the machinery in the lecture hall, but there's a pleased smile on his face. Digging into some Lorik-built technology sure beats wasting away in a Mogadorian prison. How'd it go? I ask him.
The human mind is an amazing thing, Sam.
My dad muses.
When you have gaps in your memory like I do, you come to better appreciate the things you do remember. The way your hands just repeat a task you've done enough times without even needing to think. Who needs legacies when we have the infinite power of the human mind at our disposal? Hey?
I wouldn't mind some legacies, actually, I say, glancing over at John. Sorry, he can get philosophical about sciencey stuff.
I don't mind at all, John says, his smile wistful as he looks between me and my dad.
The repairs aren't easy, my dad continues. Sander's work is impressive, and I've, been out of the game for a while. If everything works like I remember, it's all just much smaller. The lectern might be too intricate for me to get fully operational. I've been able to make some repairs to the controls. Some of the booby traps should be operational as well. It's not perfect by any means, but it's something.
I'm sure it's great, John says. Anything that can improve our training will help.
I'd like to get a team session together before we get to floor.
Nine flings open the workshop door with enough force to almost tear it loose from its hinges. He takes one big stride forward, and then violently kicks a stack of junk, sending circuit boards and scrap metal flying in our direction. I start to shield my face, but John catches the temper tantrum shrapnel with his telekinesis.
What the hell? John yells. Calm down!
Nine looks up, startled, like he didn't even realize we were in here. Sorry, he mutters, then stomps over to John. He holds out a hideously swollen right hand. Heal this. Damn, I say. What happened to you?
I punched Five in the head, Nine says, matter-of-factly. It didn't go well.
Well, that didn't take long, I think. Nine's been trying to get under Five's skin since we walked in the door. I'm actually more than a little surprised it's Nine in here, needing the healing. That's not how I would have imagined that fight going. I keep my mouth shut, letting John deal with his wounded attack dog. He takes Nine's forearm, maybe with a little more force than necessary, and holds his hand out over Nine's messed up fist. But he doesn't heal him.
You've got to chill out, John says, locking eyes with Nine. No punching our friends. No challenging them to rooftop fights. No bullshit.
Nine stares John down, and, for a second, I think he might take a swing at him, too. He doesn't. Instead, he slaps on a big grin, as if the whole thing was one big joke.
I'm like the shittiest welcoming committee ever, huh?
Back in Paradise, Sarah's mom used to bake stuff for anyone new that moved into the neighborhood. Maybe you should have to bake some cookies every time you punch someone, I suggest.
John laughs as he sets about healing Nine's hand. I love that idea, Sam.
I am not baking, Nine growls, fixing me with a death stare. My dad clears his throat. We all look over at him. Standing straight, his hands folded behind his back, it's the same look I'm sure his students at the university used to get.
Nine, I was wondering if you might want to assist me in the lecture hall.
With what?
Your Sapon built the equipment. I was hoping you might have some insight into how it works.
Nine laughs with disbelief.
Yeah, sorry, dude. I left the nerd stuff to him.
I see, my dad replies, undeterred by Nine's bluster.
In that case, perhaps we could figure out how it works as a team. Unless you're too busy punching things.
To my surprise, Nine actually considers this. I see the same wistful look on his face that I noticed on John's face earlier, and it occurs to me that they're both thinking about their Sapons. I realize then what my dad is doing, reaching out to the angry guy, trying to get him involved in a project, after-school special style. It's a total parent move, but I admire it.
All right, yeah, Nine says. It's my shit. I should know how it works. Lead the way.
As Nine and my dad head into the lecture hall, John turns to me.
Your dad's a good guy, he says. We might have to make him an honorary Sapon.
Thanks, I reply, my smile brittle. A cold knot of dread forms in my stomach, because I know what happens to Sapon around the guard. What happens to adults. It's a dark thought, I know, but I can't suppress it. I've only just reunited with my dad. I don't want to lose him. Without realizing it, I've started rubbing the scars on my wrists. John must intuit what I'm feeling because he puts a hand on my shoulder.
Don't worry, Sam, he says. We're not going to lose anyone else.
I hope he's right.
Chapter 24. So, when are you guys going to Florida? Sarah asks me casually, like it's a vacation I've been planning. I'm beat. It's a good kind of tired, though. Today was a productive day. No time spent running and hiding, no time wasted. We cataloged the contents of our chests. Sam managed to print up some solid fake IDs, and I got in some training time in the newly refurbished lecture hall. 2 days from now, I hope, I answer Sarah, dropping down to the floor to knock out a quick set of push-ups before bed. I want to get everyone together in the lecture hall tomorrow, see how the team looks. I don't expect much trouble recovering Five's chest, but you never know. It'll be good to have everyone get some experience together, and then we're off. Sarah's gone quiet. I look up at her. She sits on the edge of the bed, our bed. Still weird to even think that. Her legs curled beneath her. She wears her pajamas, a V-neck gray t-shirt, and a pair of my boxers. She's watching me, but isn't paying attention to a word I'm saying. I clear my throat and she blinks her eyes, flashing a lopsided smile.
Sorry you distracted me with push-ups. What were we talking about?
I sit down on the bed next to her, curling my fingers through her just-brushed hair. She smiles at me, and suddenly, I'm not so tired anymore. I'd be lying if I said I hadn't thought about what could happen with us sharing a bed. Things have been hectic since we've been in Chicago. Between Ella's nightmares, Five's call for help, and my own insomnia. Plus, with everyone else sleeping in the next room, it hasn't felt right. Florida, I remind her.
Oh, yeah,
Sarah says.
You lived there for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, a few months. Why?
Just trying to fill in some blanks. There's still a lot I don't know about you, John Smith.
She puts her hand on my cheek, lets her fingers run down my neck, and then along my shoulder.
Also, talking helps distract me from what I really want to do.
My hand slips through her hair, down the back of her neck, and slowly dances across her spine. Sarah shivers a little and I slide closer, bending my head down towards hers. You know, it seems pretty quiet tonight. I think everyone's asleep.
Right on cue, someone knocks on our door. Sarah's eyes widen and she laughs, her face flushed.
Is horrible timing one of your legacies?
I open the door to find Six waiting, her coat on, like she's just come in from outside. She glances over my shoulder at Sarah, then catches my exasperated look and cracks a devilish smirk.
Oops, she says. Interrupting?
It's cool, I say, playing it off. What's up?
You need to come to the roof and see this. BK's going nuts.
We pull on some clothes over our pajamas and then race down the hall after Six.
I can hear BK before I'm even at the staircase leading to the roof. The sound he makes is like a cross between a wolf howling and an elephant blowing through its trunk. It's loud and soulful. Not a bad sound at all, but totally not of Earth.
He won't shut up,
Nine says as soon as I emerge onto the roof. He rubs his temples, probably exhausted from using his telepathy to try calming BK. He is still pretty much in beagle form, although his shape bulges and stretches erratically, like he might change into something else at any second. The antler from Eight's chest is clenched in his teeth, the sound not at all muffled by it. Flecks of drool drip down the antler and into BK's fur. He stands up on his hind legs, his snout pointed at the moon, the oddly melodic noise flowing out of him. It looks like he's in some kind of trance. Eight teleports in from downstairs.
I've got Sam and Malcolm monitoring emergency channels just in case some nosy neighbor calls the cops, he says. I don't know what's gotten into him, John, but I think it's got something to do with that antler.
No shit,
Six says. She snaps her fingers at BK.
Quiet, Bernie Kosar.
BK doesn't even seem to notice. I spot Marina over at the edge of the rooftop, using her night vision to keep an eye out for anyone that might spot us. Luckily, we're high enough and Chicago is loud enough, and I don't think anyone will hear BK. Even so, I don't want to take any chances.
Did you try taking the antler from him? I ask.
Yeah, Nine replies. He didn't like that. Growled at me and wouldn't let go. I didn't want to hurt him.
That doesn't sound like BK, Sarah says, her eyes widening with concern. Think this is some kind of chimera nightmare?
Six suggests. I shake my head. All this weirdness with BK started when he got hold of that antler. It doesn't seem like anything in our chests should work against us. Even my bracelet, which hurt like hell initially, turned out to be helpful. There should be a rational explanation for this.
Where is Ella?
Sarah asks.
Could this be like what's happening with her, but for Chimera?
Sleeping right through it, Marina replies. And this seems totally different.
I reach out with my telepathy. Bernie Kosar, you need to be quiet now, but don't get any response. Not seeing any other option but to try and wrestle the antler away from him, I step forward. Before I take a second step, Bernie drops onto all fours, letting go of the antler. His howling echoes in my ears for a few seconds after it's over. I grab the antler with my telekinesis and pluck the slobber-covered thing out of the air. BK pants happily, looking around at everyone. I make eye contact with Nine, both of us patched into BK telepathically.
It's like he doesn't know what just happened, I say.
Are you drunk, BK?
Nine asks, mystified.
BK bounds over to us, tail wagging.
He's got the same look of dog euphoria that he gets when we've just come back from a really satisfying run outside.
You freaked us out, I tell him. You know you were up here making all kinds of noise, right?
BK sits down at my feet. Sarah crouches down to scratch his ears.
Can you ask him what he was doing?
Sarah says, looking up at me and Nine. Trying, I reply. And Nine nods too, squinting at BK.
It's a lot of images and feelings, you know, not exactly words.
Telepathic barking?
8 observes.
Pretty much, replies 9.
He says, I pause, wanting to make sure I'm getting my interpretation of BK's thoughts right. He says he was calling the others. I hold up the antler. I guess that's what this is for.
The others?
Marina asks.
You mean the Chimera from Ella's ship?
I guess so, I reply, looking down at BK.
Do you think they heard you?
BK rolls over onto his back, asking Sarah to rub his belly. I guess that's the Chimera equivalent of a shrug. He doesn't know, I say. Nine shakes his head.
Well, crisis averted. I'm going to bed. Can we have a night without screaming or howling? Please?
Everyone else follows Nine downstairs, leaving just Sarah, BK, and me. The night air is cool, and now that BK has stopped with the noise, it's peaceful. I kneel down next to Sarah and put my arms around her.
Cold? Not really, she says, smiling. But you can leave your arms. I see why you like it so much up here.
We sit like that for a while. Sarah in my arms, both of us gazing out over the Chicago skyline.
This is one of those perfect moments,
the kind I need to save up and remember for when things get bleak. And then, because maybe Sarah is right, and bad timing is one of my legacies, a dark shape detaches from the night sky and zooms towards us. Chapter 25.
What is that?
Sarah cries. I don't know, I reply, springing to my feet and instinctively putting myself between Sarah and the black blur that's descending on us. I fire up my lumen, feeling some comfort in the fresh heat, ready for anything. The dark form slows down. It's definitely a person, I realize. The shape lands gracefully on the other side of the roof, its arms raised in a gesture of peace.
Five?
Hey, guys,
Five says.
You're up late. Did I scare you?
What do you think?
Sarah asks, gesturing at the fireball still held in my hands. On edge, I finally let them dissipate. Five, wearing a black sweatshirt and pants, pulls down his hood so I can see his apologetic face.
Shoot, sorry. I didn't think anyone would notice.
I legitimately thought we were under attack for a second there, so my words come out harsher than I mean them to.
What the hell were you doing?
Just flying around. Sometimes I like to see how high I can go.
I try to think of a response that won't make me sound too bossy. I'm all for training, but flying around the city of Chicago seems like a pretty stupid idea. Hiding in plain sight is one thing. Hiding while teenagers soar through the air around your base is another.
Aren't you worried someone might see you?
Sarah asks, taking the words right out of my mouth. Five shakes his head.
No offense, Sarah, but you'd be surprised how little your people bother to look up. Anyway, it's night, and I'm in dark clothes. Trust me, guys, I'm cautious.
Still, there are cameras to think about, airplanes, who knows what else, I say, trying not to sound like I'm lecturing. Five sighs deeply and holds out his hands, like he's sick of arguing. On the heels of his run-in with Nine earlier, I guess he doesn't want to make any more trouble.
I'll stop if you want me to,
he says.
You should know that I'm getting better at it, though. covering more distance. In fact, I could probably just swoop down to the Everglades and pick up my chest, be back before breakfast.
I like this can-do attitude from Five. He suddenly doesn't seem like the kind of guy we need to worry about passing up training for video games. Still, I shake my head.
We'll go as a team, Five. We don't need to do anything alone ever again.
Safety in numbers. You're right.
Five yawns, stretching his arms out.
All right. I'm gonna turn in. The lecture hall first thing tomorrow, right?
Right.
Once Five has marched downstairs, I turn to Sarah. She's gazing up at the night sky, a tiny smile playing at her lips. I take her hand.
What do you make of that?
I ask her.
She shrugs. If you could fly like that, wouldn't you?
Only if you could fly with me. Sarah rolls her eyes, elbowing me gently in the ribs.
Okay, Cornball. Let's get to bed before anything else crazy happens.
Chapter 26. Are you sure you're up for this? Ella nods her head as we walk towards the lecture hall together. She looks pale, dark circles under her wide eyes, like she's just gotten over a horrible illness. She made it through last night without any nightmares or screaming fits, but she still looks drained. I can do it, Ella says, straightening up. No one will think any less of you if you sit out, I tell her.
You don't have to baby me, she replies sharply. I can train just as hard as the rest of you guys.
I nod, dropping the argument. Maybe some physical activity will be good for Ella. At the very least, it should tire her out enough so that she'll get some real rest. We're the last two to arrive in the lecture hall. Everyone stands in the middle of the room, dressed in workout clothes. Malcolm sits behind the lectern's console, examining the glowing buttons and levers through his glasses.
Nine claps his hands when he sees us.
All right, let's get started. Capture the flag time, baby. The ultimate test of teamwork and, ass-kicking ability? Six rolls her eyes, and Five stifles a groan. I stand next to Eight, who flashes me a quick smile. I hope we end up on the same team. The rules are simple, Nine says. He gestures to the opposite end of the gym where he's mounted a pair of makeshift flags made out of old Chicago Bulls t-shirts. The first team goes to grab the other team's flags and brings it back to their side is the winner. You've got to be holding the flag at all times, no telekinesis. Also, no teleporting the flag back to your own side. That means you, Eight? Eight smirks. No problem. I like a challenge. Piled on the floor are four Mogadorian rifles that I grabbed on our way out of Arkansas. Figured we might want them for just this kind of exercise. I notice Sam eyeing them hesitantly. What are those for? He asks. Each team is going to get two guns, explains John, jumping in. Malcolm has modified them so they're non-lethal, like stun guns. We always end up using their own guns against the Moogs in battle. I figured this would be good practice. Also, we wanted to give you non-guard a fighting chance, says Nine, glancing at Sam and Sarah. Malcolm strides over from the lectern, his hands clasped behind his back. I'll be using the lecture hall's system to throw in some obstacles, he says. Remember, if anyone gets hurt, it's okay to call a timeout so Marina or John can heal you. Nine sighs, annoyed. There are no timeouts in a real fight, so let's try to keep the wimping out to a minimum. John glances around, taking a less cavalier approach. Remember, this is just practice. We're not really trying to kill each other.
John and Nine are captains, dividing us into two teams. John chooses Six with his first pick, and 9 selects 8. Next, John takes 5, and 9 picks Marina. John's third pick is Bernie Kosar, and then 9 surprises everyone by choosing Sarah.